Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. It's Mark Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, once a month, generally on the first Tuesday of the month, we have our friend Angelina Grace on with the Angelina Grace Radio Show. And we're so excited to have her on this evening. As always, to find out more about the shows, to listen to replays, and to find out about all the changes and everything that are going on, you can go to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And I'm going to go ahead and say, Angelina, are you there?
I am. Hi, everybody. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and start by giving out the number and let everybody know that you'll primarily be doing the readings, and I'll be doing some backup, of course. That means that I just like to pull cards for romance questions. So if you want to call in for a free reading, we're going to be doing callers in about 30 minutes. And you can reach us at 646-716-9663. That's 646-716-9663. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and hand this off to you, Angelina. And one of the things that me and Angelina are going to be doing is that we're going to be going through some topics together this evening and kind of bouncing off of each other and talking about different topics and everything like that. So I'm really excited that I'm going to be able to assist this evening. And with that, go ahead.
So hi, everybody. Thank you, Mark. I feel guided to have the topic today be about radical acceptance. It's kind of a big one, but I feel it's important in a lot of aspects of our lives. What is radical acceptance? Well, you would think it starts with the self first. So really meaning radical and out there and truly embracing and accepting what is. So I feel like when we're going through struggles in our life and we don't really know which way to go or have a problem resurface over and over and issues come, it's really about looking at it for what it is and both accepting the weakness and the strength that comes from those lessons. So what does it mean to accept yourself? And to me, personally, that means accepting both the light in you and the dark, the parts of us which are divine and the parts of us which are dark. And the only way we can transmute that darkness into light is by shining light into the darkness. So one of the tools I found is acceptance and really accepting where you are and who you are. Because when we don't accept, we live in denial, and denial only perpetuates the problem if you can't even see what it is in front of you. A lot of the darkness in the world is both within ourselves and without, is because people want to be in a state of ignorance, willing or subconsciously or consciously, are not willing to look at what is and really accept it for what is, denying that, you know, I have to call people on their BS and call myself on my own BS, because nothing gets changed if it just, you know, doesn't have any light shed on it. You know, to me, light is information and love, and darkness is just unknown information. So, you know, I feel like there's a couple tools we can use to be more neutral and tapping into our intuition, connecting it to acceptance of who we are, both light and our dark. So one of the tools maybe we could walk through right now is a visualization. So wherever you are in your life, whatever challenges you're facing, let's really look at them for what they are, whether they be health, education, relationships, whatever it is, let's just look at them for what they are. And really acknowledge and see it for what it is. Because the only way we transmute and alchemize these darker aspects is to bring light to them. So let's embrace them, not shun them, but let's really look at them and embrace those feelings that come up. Whatever's coming up for you is your intuition telling you the thing that you need to work on and what is needs to be looked at. It's like there's this lady named Till Scott. She refers to herself as a spiritual catalyst, and she once said that our thoughts are like children, and if we ignore them and punish them and reject them, then they'll be sad, and that sadness needs to be dealt with. Otherwise, it's repressed and develops as illness or what may be. So let's just sit with those challenges and those things we face. And I want you to imagine a bird, any kind of bird, anything with wings. Just imagine that you're getting on this bird. And it could be anything you want. And we get on our bird and we fly high towards the sky and see our circumstance below. Now, from this point of perspective, we're able to see the whole picture. And that's how spirit works, is that it's this higher perspective that we're able to tap into to really see the whole picture. And now, do you find answers coming from within what it is that you can do to resolve? And what came for you is best for you. But I find that, you know, when we get stressed out, use this technique. If you're, you know, going to give a business proposal, or, you know, going into an interview, whatever it might be that you're nervous about, just take a minute, you know, go to the bathroom if you're in public, do whatever you need to do to get on your bird and take that higher perspective and take flight. And in our own humanity as humans, we develop that way as far as seeing birds as almost holy or associated with the angelic realm, because they are the only creatures that have wings and are able to get away from danger. So when you fill in that flight or flight stance or the reptilian brain and you're scared, just remember to get on your bird and rise above and see things as they are, and then take action in whatever way necessary to alchemize and elevate what it is you're dealing with. And my main point with reading oracle cards for you guys is to remind you of your own internal guidance system. It's not that I do anything. The universe works through the cards. And I am here just as the messenger. I am here to help you with whatever you need and remind you of your own power, your own empowerment of choice, free will, and your godliness. Because you truly are a creator. And you're much more than you think you are, that we've been told that we are. We're more than that we can ever imagine. And it's our ability to respond, or our responsibility to live our lives. And what does every human being want? A happy life. Everyone wants to just be happy, and they're also doing the best they can. So, you know, recognize that in yourself and know that, you know, it's not me doing the healing. It's you. You're the one who has the power to do that for yourself, within yourself. And if anyone's ever heard of Bruce Lipton, he's written a book called The Knowledge or Wisdom of Ourselves. And what he's learned in his studies is actually that we don't, we're not controlled by our genes. We control our genes by our lifestyle, by our thoughts. And this ties into, you know, law of attraction and the rest of it, because our thoughts really, really do affect our bodies. And, you know, people think emotions or thoughts are these intangible things that aren't real. But one of my good friends pointed out to me once that everything started out with a thought, from the table or couch you sit on. So everything starts out from that formless place and manifests and bleeds into our reality. And belief is such a strong thing. The power of the mind is so immensely strong, you can change your own DNA, your genetic structure, just by your lifestyle, by the deeds you choose, the thoughts you choose. Everything helps create. So without going too far, I want to tie it back to acceptance. And really realizing your godliness is accepting who you are, not trying to be anybody else, which I've spent a long part of my life doing, trying to please others, trying to be somebody I'm not, trying to be someone I think people would want me to be, when really it was only a detriment to me and them, because I wasn't being truthful or honest with my own divinity. And our own divinity is truly being yourself, God expressed. And God seems like a big word to most people, but realize that God is all that is. It permeates everything, and you're a part of that. You are a piece of that. And we are all a part of each other. So, you know, we can fling around the saying that all is one, but rudimentary, the root of it is true. It's very true. All you have to do is go on the moon and look down at the earth, or go on your bird and realize that we really are all one. I like to see it as though we are cells in the body of the earth, and that earth is our spaceship, our body. And, you know, you can either choose to be a cancerous cell or a white blood cell, or something that defends the light, so to speak. So I think a part of accepting ourselves is really accepting the darkest part of ourselves and the lightest part. I think it was Nelson Mandela that said, someone correct me if I'm wrong, that it's not our darkness that we're afraid of, it's our light, our greatest potential, that scares us. So really embracing both, knowing that there is duality, there are opposites, but they need each other, just as light, dark, sun, moon, male, female, right hemisphere, left hemisphere, black, white, you can go on and on. They're interconnected. And we don't know joy without sorrow. I would not know courage without fear. We would not know these things if we did not have the contrast. And it's up to us with our free will to discern and choose which is right for us, and accepting ourselves wholly. And I like to play with words. I just love etymology, the root of words, because I like to understand where it's coming from and what it really means, the origin of it. And I like to play with that word for myself, because it's funny how whole is similar to holy, H-O-L-E. W-H-O-L-E, or holy, like divine, H-O-L-Y. And those can be used interchangeably. And it's almost as if when we are whole and within ourselves and accept ourselves for who we are, who we truly are, at the depths of our heart, and express that then we integrate this wholeness of being. It is holy. And I feel like that's where a lot of the suffering comes from, is forgetting that we're connected, getting lost in separation. So radical acceptance, I think, you know, when we're able to accept ourselves, then we don't project on others and, you know, the shadow aspects of us, and we can really truly accept others because we accept ourselves. And it's not easy. Sometimes, you know, there's some dirt to clean up in your house. But we don't sweep it under the rug, you know. And when I say we, I mean the trillions of cells that live within me, this bio suit that I have. We collectively are creating my life in that aspect. So, you know, to clean a house, you don't ignore the dirt. You don't roll in it. You don't sweep it under the rug. But we can look at it, and we can acknowledge that dirt. So radical acceptance could be a part of acknowledging all that dirt within us that we need to detox and clean out, see it for what it is, you can sit with it, you know. I found, you know, going through depression and the rest of it, through which one might call, you know, might label it dark night of the soul, is that my gem from going through that was realizing that our emotions are there for a reason, and not to be afraid of them, but to truly feel them. You know, with the medication they give for depressed, quote-unquote, people, which everyone experiences depression at one point or another in their life, on some level, mostly, that we just give a Band-Aid called the pharmaceutical companies that just give you medication. If that works for you, that's fine. I'm just using metaphor and saying that, you know, that was just a Band-Aid to suppress my own emotions personally, how I felt. Because I realized that sadness was trying to tell me something, just like a neglected child or a neglected thought, so to speak. If you keep neglecting it, it will manifest in a different way in your life and show up some way. So if you don't deal with the shadow will deal with you at some point. So to embrace all those aspects of ourselves and really be who we are and show up and be the godlike creators that we came here to be. That's my tidbit. What do you think, Mark?
Oh, it's just amazing to hear all the information come from you, you know. And, you know, I guess the question I would ask is, you know, what do you think are like two or three aspects on why people have this non-acceptance or the depression or the fear?
I think that's a part of acceptance, like you said. The depression comes from, at least in my own experience, the depression came from not accepting what is. And things were so hard and so hurtful, I didn't want to look at them. I didn't even want to acknowledge it. It was too painful to feel. So I stuffed it down. And, you know, you even look at the word depression. It's almost like our life force gets depressed like a coil, like a spring. And when you just keep pushing it down, it has to come up at some point, and that might manifest, explode in some way. But I think the depression comes from non-acceptance and a lot of other factors, but that's one root of it, is the non-acceptance. Depression comes from not being willing to change, at least in my own experience, and not accepting what is, and being afraid to feel those emotions, and just pressing yourself down, depressing yourself. And it's rooted in childhood, a lot of it.
I think a lot of aspects that come up also is judgment of others and self-judgment of ourselves. I mean, the way we treat ourselves, we would never treat even our worst enemies. And it's interesting how much we have so much self-judgment about who we are and what we think we need to be and even our own expectations of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the key concepts that's been out there for quite a while now that a lot of people understand is you know, because you had said earlier, one of the key aspects to this is having resistance to what is.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of that, I think of, well, what you resist persists. That's why, you know, we were quoting Teal earlier, and I enjoy a lot of her YouTube videos, different things that she's taught. And she has a video out there on emotions. And, you know, she kind of echoed what a lot of spiritual teachers have said, which is, you know, you have to fully feel your emotions. Like, if you're upset about something, you know, don't try to just, like, you know, bury it inside. I mean, for most male, you know, children, you know, we were taught at a very young age, boys don't cry. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, talking about creating a whole generation of individuals that can't clear emotion or fully feel it. Because, you know, the moment you can fully feel the emotion and let it flow through you, and, you know, I was meeting with my friend this weekend, Mike, and, you know, Mike was talking about one of the things he does with a lot of the emotions that he has is that he pulls them into his heart and then he sends them up, you know, almost like letting them go, you know, raising the vibration.
Wow.
And I think the key concept to this is really when you do come across emotions, you know, because, you know, we are emotional beings. We look and we take a look at situations, and lots of times we have expectations on what we expect based on our filters. And, you know, we have an emotion. It triggers us. You know, lots of things are triggers, you know, because of our parents or the way we're brought up or our belief systems and stuff like that. And, you know, lots of times, you know, things are going to upset us. And the question is, you know, what do you do with that energy? Because that's energy. And, you know,
emotion.
I think for the new generation, such as yourself, when you talk about, you know, rainbow children, indigo, and all that kind of stuff, is that, and for a lot of spiritual people now, to add on to all of this, you know, a lot of us are empathic. So we're going to pick up the emotions and energy of other people. So sometimes when we're angry or we're depressed, it's not even us. It's,
yep.
you know, someone who's near us. It could be a relative. It could be someone that you work with or someone who's near you. And,
a lot
you know,
of our baggage isn't even ours.
Yeah. So, you know, it kind of brings that whole point across, which is, you know, how quickly, you know, this is, I think you and I were talking about this a few months ago. We were talking about, you know, when you deal with something in a situation, and I think this comes from the Four Agreements, when we discuss that, you know, when something happens, let's just say, I'll use my friend's example. My friend Lisa told me this story once, and that is she was at a bank, and she was exiting the bank, and a woman in front of her not only did not hold the door, but almost kind of like swung it back closed, almost to slam Lisa in the door. And, you know, my friend called me and she goes, you know, I'm just so upset about, you know, what's going on here and all that. And I said, well, you know, if you take it from the Four Agreements, you know, you have to recognize that 99% of what you notice that you interact with or you have a trigger or emotional response to relates to something that's going on with somebody else and has nothing to do with you. And, you know, in these situations, what we're seeing is we're seeing, you know, how quickly, you know, because in Lisa's good example, and it's not just Lisa, it's pretty much everybody, I mean, all of us are, you know, if you want to say guilty of this. You know, Lisa was like, I couldn't believe she was so upset with me. And I said, well, why do you think it had anything to do with you at all? I said, you know, and I'll give you a good example. I said, you know, and I said, let me see if I can shift this for you. Do you recognize that her mother was on hospice and dying that day? Do you realize that when she went to the bank to get money to pay for medication that she couldn't afford, that she was denied the money and had to go back to her dying mother? and that you didn't even exist, that she didn't even see you because she was so caught up in her own emotions. And she's like, oh my goodness, you know, I thought it was all about me. I couldn't believe she was doing this to me. And I said, well, you're not the only one. I mean, so many of us take on stuff and say, this must be about me. And the question would be is, where does that come from? Does it come from our own judgment of ourselves? You know, that when something bad happens, that it's got to be because of us. So I think there's a lot of aspects where it's interesting because, and I apologize because I can never pronounce the author's name correctly, but the guy who wrote The Four Agreements basically said that
Don Miguel Ruiz?
Yes, thank you. One of the ways that you get beyond this is that you look at every individual as God. And there's actually a lot to this because there's truth to that. I mean, we are all one and we are all co-creators and, you know, in a certain different aspect of our consciousness, we are really all one and, you know, we are actually all God. But he's kind of going to kind of a teacher-student kind of profile for a minute on this idea. And that is, you know, you could take, you know, whoever you believe in, you know, it could be Krishna, you know, it could be Buddha, it could be Jesus, it could be Mother Mary, it could be God himself, you know. And, you know, the thought process that comes up during this is that imagine, let's just say, if you were Lisa and you were coming out of the bank and Jesus had the door and he swung it back, you know that Jesus, you know that Jesus, actually it was your karma, that's why he did it. but you know, the way you would look at this is you would say, well, you know, Jesus loves me beyond anything else. I mean, you know, if we understand anything about new spirituality, you know, whatever you believe in, you have to understand that that divine energy, the field, the matrix, you know, the creator, Jesus, Buddha, whoever you want to, you know, believe in, you have to understand there's only one thing you need to understand about that energy, and that is it's unconditional love. There is no judgment. There is no punishing you for being bad, you know, or anything like that, right? So when you look at the aspect of this, you have to recognize that for every individual, whoever they are, they've been kind of put there either to mirror for you something, for you to learn something, or they're there to, you know, kind of interact with you in some kind of co-creation. I mean, interactions with people, especially when they're angry or a lot of negativity, are usually there for very specific purposes. So lots of times when I have a negative interaction with somebody, I actually step back and observe it and say, well, this is really interesting. Why would I be having a negative interaction with this person? And what exactly is going on? But if you can kind of rise above the situation and not make it about yourself, you can kind of look at these situations and say, this is really some very loving, unconditional God-like person who's trying to show me something. So if I can take that position and look at it that way, then how would I look at the situation different, such as someone slamming the door on me? And how do I how do I interact with that? Because, you know, a lot of people would probably push through that door and probably grab that person and throw them to the ground and say, you know, what's your problem? But, you know, if that was Christ or if that was Mother Mary or whatever it is that you believe in, what kind of position would you be in and how would you handle that situation? You would look at it completely different because you'd say, well, number one, I understand this being loves me, and if there's anything going on here, there's something I need to understand about it. So what can I take away from it versus making it about this negative experience? So, you know, that's just kind of my thought about that. But when we were talking earlier about, you know, the aspects of resistance and hanging on to stuff, and, you know, you kind of said it really early on, so much channel information at the beginning of the show, absolutely amazing the way you work. Is that you had said that, I've got to grasp the idea here for a second. So much stuff was going on, I'm trying to keep track of it all. you were kind of talking about the fact that that unresolved emotions manifest as disease. And, you know, I kind of try to not pigeonhole everything across the board, but I'll put myself out there and say that pretty much every piece of disease or any type of disease that happens is related to some type of trapped emotion. And I think this is actually the basis of pretty much, you know, if we talk about 1,000 healing modalities out there, I think every spiritual healer understands that that's pretty much the root of it. I know a number of teachers
and science
like,
is proving. And science is proving the power of our thoughts and emotions. Science has backed that up. What the ancients always knew, that our emotions and our body and thoughts are connected.
Reminds me of the old Stephen King movies where it says, you know, what's eating you? It's like, you know, we like to think of it as an emotion we're dealing with, but, you know, the deeper aspect of it is if you have that emotion underneath of you, and, you know, I think this would be a good time for you to kind of talk about that when you talk about the water experiments.
There were these water molecule experiments that a scientist named Dr. Emoto from Japan, if anyone's aware or have heard of it, just type Dr. Emoto water molecule experiment in the web or Google. And basically what he found from his experiments is that, you know, our thoughts and emotions create our experiences, like who we are, because we are 70% water. A good reference, if you want to look deeper into it, research Dr. Emoto's experiment, and also if you get a chance, it's on Netflix, I believe, or anywhere you can get it. It's called What the Bleep Do We Know? I'm sure a lot of people listening and preaching to the choir, and they might have, but for anyone that doesn't, that's a good movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? And in his experiments, what he found, just a quick synopsis if you're not aware, basically he took two identical samples of river water, and they were both atomically, or the structure of them was identical initially, taking it from the stream and containing them in bottles. So what he did is he used intention as the hypothesis, like, will my intention affect this water? So what he did was he took a label, wrote the word love on the label and put it on one of the bottles, and then on the other bottle he wrote the word hate and put that label on the bottle. So what he would do is focus and isolate the element of this bottle and focus his intention by thinking loving thoughts with the label of water that said love. And he'd also play really lovely music and send loving thoughts and just focus on love for this water, and did the same for hate. So what he found is, looking at the water molecule structures under a microscope, very, very small levels, micro levels, that the water, the structure of the water molecule literally changed. So what he found in the love water experiment is that they had a structure to them, just as if you've seen sacred geometry, just look at a snowflake or, you know, our cells. It was structured in such a beautiful way that it's what nature does best. And that was the conclusion for the love bottle. But when he looked at the hate water, he found very ugly structures, nothing that made any sense, just didn't look very pleasing at all. So we find structure with love, destruction with hate. And he wrote and said to that water, I hate you, you make me sick. So the premise of the experiment is that we are water. We're literally made up of water. Parts of us is 70, you know, they say 70% or so of water. So, you know, even in the What the Bleep Do We Know, one character mentioned, imagine if thoughts can do that to water, What do thoughts do to us? What can they do to us? So that's the new emergence of science and spirituality that are merging and realizing what the ancients knew and remembering that it is all connected. Your thoughts and emotions help create who you are. So if you're thinking negative thoughts, you know, then you'll manifest that. And they, you know, the doctor doesn't want to tell you that, that your illness might be connected to an emotional or a thought process that you've had for a while and it manifested as illness. So, you know, what they found in the science, at least research that they've done on cancer patients, studies shown that, you know, it a lot of the times cancer comes from unforgiveness and just looking at it for what it is. Everything, even when, you know, when you work too hard and you're just putting out way more energy than you get back and you're just working your body, your mind, your soul and everything to the bone and you get sick. But how'd that happen? It's not from some germ. Germs and bacteria are in our stomach. It helps us be human. We're more bacteria than what we are we call ourselves. The bacteria are kind of running the show. So the point is you know, it's all around us. But what creates that illness is the imbalance and forgetting that the emotions are connected to the thoughts and body. So I just found his work revolutionary, Dr. Emoto's, and that, you know, to realize this more in a deeper understanding is to really pay attention to your thoughts. You're not going to monitor each and every thought. We have over, you know, 20,000 or more thoughts a day. So you're going to drive yourself crazy if you try to pick up and be aware of every single thought, but it's catching those negative ones and stopping them in their tracks and consciously saying, I choose something else, and not beating yourself up if you choose otherwise. You know, mm-hmm. Same thing with a donut. You know you shouldn't grab that donut because it's full of sugar and the rest of it, and, you know, you decide to eat it. That's okay. That was a part of your habit that you need a break, maybe. You know, this is just an example. But, you know, in that process, you know, there's the donut again. The next day, we can choose not to put the donut to our mouth. You know, we can say, oh, okay, I'm choosing otherwise, and be gentle with yourself. You know, and it's funny that he, metaphorically, that to me, that Dr. Emoto worked with water because, you know, I'm sure most listeners are probably, you know, kind of familiar with the idea of the elements relating to our body because we are the elements. And water is emotion, energy in motion. If you don't keep that energy flowing like a river, then it's going to block up like a dam and it's going to explode one way or another. So we need that energy to flow freely and embrace it and feel it just as water flows freely. And that it needs to be energy in motion. That's why it's called emotion. It's literally energy in motion. You need to let it out and flow with it because that motion, that direction has to go somewhere. So we might as well steer and adjust ourselves to something positive. You know, even if it's the most negative emotion, we embrace that. Even if it's the most joyous emotion, we embrace that. Hummingbird medicine teaches that in shamanism. Joy. Lighten up a little bit, you know, but it's okay to be deep. It's okay to dive in and really feel those things.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of what the water experiments taught us, we've seen in other teachers such as Louise Hay's book and also with teachings from, you know, from Theta and what we understand from the Theta classes, which is, you know, pretty much any type of emotion that's buried will manifest with a certain type of either chakra closing and an imbalance of an organ and that part of energy, or with certain things manifesting such as disease. So, you know, it's a common theme that's out there. It's the basis of a lot of different healing modalities. And, you know, one of the things I thought was interesting is that, you know, for a lot of the different teachings I've been seeing lately, you know, one of the common concepts that's out there is that we're not really our thoughts. So, you know, as earlier, we were kind of discussing that most of us, or a portion of us, are empathic. And I would almost say, just like everybody can be intuitive or psychic, I would say that all of us are actually empathic. And I think, you know, because that's a big thing. I mean, think about what is empathy, what is that empathic ability, more than to connect with another individual and understand what's going on with them, which really goes back to the nature of where we were before we fell, you know, from our higher selves and our abilities that we had before, which is we were all connected. We were connected to the planet, we were connected to nature, and we were connected to ourselves. And I think through it all, with everything that's happened in the lower vibration, I say the difference is that everybody's empathic. It's just that some of us, just like psychic ability or intuitive ability, are just more aware of it than others. So,
And we all have the ability and power.
Yeah, and if all of us are empathic, then it's, you know, at a simplest level, just going with that, a lot of what's going on, a lot of the thoughts or a lot of the emotions or feelings or depression or whatever we're dealing with might actually not have anything to do with us at all. But it goes back to that original idea I discussed earlier, and that is how quickly are we to assume that everything that's going on has so much to do with us. So the thought that I would put out there, the idea I would put out there is to say, what if all our minds are connected at once, or we have this empathic ability to fully connect to others? What if most of the thoughts that we have in our heads aren't even ours?
Mm-hmm.
And how much of our thoughts define who we are and how we show up and how we handle things? So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, this is a lot of the basis of the oneness movement and a lot of the, you know, the awakening and different types of spiritual practices I've been getting into lately in the last 3 or 4 months. But it also, you know, when I originally got down to Florida, I had met this teacher who had spent about 30 years over in India. His name was Robert. And he actually teaches meditation over at the local yoga studio here in Winter Park, Florida. And I remember sitting down, and it was funny because he has this meditation class he does every Saturday. And I figured he would kind of like switch it up. You know, I have a tendency to do different meditations or different journeys. And it's funny because for most of the times that I sat down with him probably for about 3 or 4 weeks, you know, a lot of the meditations that he did was simply along the lines of taking a deep breath, relaxing. And then some of the things he was saying was along these lines. So I want to just say this out to everybody. And I want you to really think about it for a moment. So the first thing he said is that we are not our emotions. The next thing that he said is we are not our thoughts. We are not our bodies. We are not our breath. And then if you go to advanced levels of teaching with oneness and stuff like that, you even go and say, as an example on Mark, is to even say that I'm not even Mark. I'm not even the identification of Mark. Or maybe the final aspect of ego, which is Mark. And I don't mean ego in a negative way. I just mean that final grasping of energy of the soul that has identification separate from the source or the creator. So, given all that, you know, the question would be is, you know, because everybody talks about, you know, and I had this problem for years until I started meditating, is like how many negative thoughts do we have? know, how much negative stuff do we have going on? How much of that defines our daily lives on how we deal with ourselves and how we deal with others? So the question would be, if you take the idea that your thoughts aren't actually yours, but they're just, you know, random group consciousness that just happens to float through, and maybe you pay attention to some of it because you feel that it's part of you or it defines who you are. But what if it really isn't you at all, at a higher mm-hmm. spiritual level? One of the techniques that I really love to teach people who have a lot of negative self-talk is basically to create a gatekeeper in your head, which is you simply take all your thoughts and your emotions and you move them outside your head. And when you have a thought, you just kind of say, you kind of take it to the gatekeeper and you say, well, is this a positive thing? Is this going to lead me in a positive direction? And if it doesn't, just ignore the thought. So I might have a thought in my mind that says, listen, I'm rambling on the radio. I sound like an idiot. And I'd say, well, you know, is that really something I want to accept as far as a thought? And the answer is no. It's not positive for me. It doesn't do me any good. It's not going to help me in any way. So what I'm going to do is I'm just simply going to drop that thought. Just like if, you know, someone called me up and said, you know, this is what I think of you. You know, in most situations, I'm hopefully not going to take that person's word and, you know, go beat myself up over what someone else thinks about me. So the question would be is if you do have all these thoughts and you're taking them and looking at them, and it's kind of like a computer. You got some you want to save into your folder, and there's some of them you want to throw in the trash. And really just kind of getting into the management of what you're going to allow to impact who you are and how you're going to allow it to influence who you are, and really kind of taking a look at that. And sometimes the best way of doing that is even go a step further at a high philosophy level and just basically say that for every thought that's going on, that actually it probably has nothing to do with you. So why would you allow it to influence you? And it's not something that's easy to do to get to that point. I mean, to recognize that you need to filter a lot of stuff and, you know, you might take a lot of ownership for a lot of it because it feels right to you of, well, you know, I had this experience in my life, so I guess I could understand why I would feel that way, so I'm going to own all those thoughts. But, you know, even if that was the case, even if it was some of your life experience, is there anything good that comes out of really taking that thought and owning it? Or why not just rewrite the story, you know?
And one example that helps me is as far as owning, empowering which thoughts you want to empower. Because the prefrontal cortex, the earliest part of our brain that's developing, is in charge of higher thought. So exactly what you're talking about is we have that choice now as human beings in this point of our brain development, is we have that choice. Is this thought serving me or is it a detriment? And is it true? Can you ask yourself and truly believe that you're speaking nonsense on the radio? You say, no, I'm not, you know, because that doesn't empower you and it's not the truth. As far as I'm concerned for myself, that is not the truth. And we have that choice to empower ourselves with our thoughts or disempower. And the disempowering will just lead you down more discernment, practicing discernment and listening to your own guidance. Because Moji's a man that is considered, you know, a sage or whatever you want to, you know, he's a philosophical speaker, you know. His name is Moji, M-O-O-G-I. I'm sorry, J-I. And he related thoughts and emotions being as though, you know, can relate them to the clouds. And I've even heard a wave or ocean interpretation where the thoughts come from the oneness and crash onto the shore, but yet they sink back into the oneness. And same with the clouds. The emotion and thoughts are passing, but which one are you going to grab onto? And you can't. You can't grab onto a cloud, and you can't grab onto a wave. So you ride the wave. You ride the cloud and the wind. you let it take you and you trust it, but don't get swept up in it. You know, we're whatever thought and belief we choose to empower. If you think you are this or that, then you own that. But don't be negative, because you're a child of God. You know, those negative things came from someone else. And I was going to mention, you're talking about this, and it makes me think of Archangel Haniel. She, her stone has been associated with Moonstone, and some of her guidance and assistance is being true to yourself and honoring your own rhythms. So some of what, if you guys are into crystals, I love crystals, but Moonstone helps you, what you were just speaking about, be able to tell the difference between someone else's stuff and your stuff. Does this belong to me, or did I get it from my mom 30 years ago? Does this belong to me, or some lady that was angry about something and I picked up on it? And really ask yourself, and if it does belong to you, then look at it and process it, love it, embrace it, and integrate it, you know. And that's what Archangel Haniel helps us to realize, is what is ours and what is not ours, and to honor our emotions and honor our rhythms.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the interesting things to kind of think about is, you know, what if you could go through life and just be present, be in the now, and when it comes to emotions, thoughts, and life experiences as you go through life, what if instead of you judging it, what if you just had no resistance to it, and you just let things be? And you didn't have any judgment, okay, this is good or this is bad. What if everything is just happening? And there's this thought process out there that, you know, it's possible that if you would actually slow down, they had this kind of drinking water glass thing, which I thought was really neat. And that is, if you could actually slow down and watch, you would actually see that your hand reaches for the glass of water before you actually think that you want to drink. So if everything in life, you know, and then it's interesting because it gets into this whole thing that we could probably talk about for another hour, which is my hand goes to grasp the glass of water. My brain then assigns a value to it because the ego wants to maintain control of the body. So, you know, it's as though I guess I'm thirsty, you know. But, you know, if it's possible that everything is just occurring and that we're almost on, you know, autopilot, then there's no value in assigning, you know, good or bad to anything and just accepting it and just allowing it to be. And how easy would it be in life if you could remove yourself from judgment of everything? You know, because how do we determine if we're depressed? We look at a situation, we say, well, I'm not happy because this doesn't meet my expectations, or, you know, it's kind of like, you remember from Greg Braden in the Seven of Seen Mirrors, which is such an incredible video on how we mirror each other. He talks about the anchoring of light and darkness and how the Creator created both. And if you want to get away from fear, you just have to recognize that that everything that occurs is of the Creator, even the bad stuff. And that if you could just let things be and not have judgment about them. And, you know, I understand there's a lot of things that people consider to be really negative, and a lot of bad things that, you know, people have seen in the universe that's going on. But if you can actually step back and recognize that you can't, and you had talked about this earlier, you can't understand the light unless you know the darkness. You can't understand love until you've lost love. You can't understand, you know, we live in such, I mean, the answer to all of it is that we live in a duality. That's the nature of this dimension. So if you know, you're going to have light and shadow, you're going to have something, and then you're going to have the taking away of something. You know, they say the only way you can really love is to understand that for part of that time period that you're in love with somebody, there's a fear in the background that you're going to lose this individual, you know. So, you know, it's such a duality aspect of everything. So We're kind of counting down to the last couple minutes of the show and everything, so why don't you go ahead and just close out with something since we're pretty much out of time.
Are we really? No card readings today?
Yeah, no card readings today.
I'm sorry, everybody, next time, next Tuesday, but I think to close out is just to remember that I think a lot of our problems are rooted in not loving ourselves. And I know that's like a catch-all phrase and it's kind of big, but in essence, it's true. To really love yourself. And it gets a little paradoxical, like we're just saying, you know, you don't want to have, you almost want to come from this space of non-judgment. But at the same time, you know, there are things you need to call out, like call yourself and other people out on their BS if they're really doing something morally wrong, you know, and recognizing that that's wrong. We know humanly that is wrong. But from a higher perspective, in a way, you know, beyond those kinds of things, what really is wrong, and then we have the right, like you said, the non-judgment and radically accepting yourself, not judging them as bad as good. You know, there's bad thoughts, good thoughts, bad emotions, and good emotions, but seeing them for what they are just emotions and they are just thoughts. And you choose with your own divinity, your own sovereignty, and your own free will, which ones to empower. How are you going to make yourself? How are you going to empower yourself? What are you going to do today to step closer to living your dream?
Okay, why don't you go ahead and give everybody your website?
Oh, sure thing. It's angelinagrace.org.
Excellent.
Would you like
let me go ahead and do a radio ad. And why don't you just pull one card for the month of June?
Okay.
So I just want to let everybody know you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, Angelina is on once a month. Her next date that she'll be on the radio will be July, I think it's July 1st. So that'll be the next time she's on in the same time slot. And what do you have for the card?
So we're going to pull for the month of June. Okay, we got from the Animal Power card deck is the Lynx, and it's discernment. Look beyond immediate appearances. So the energy for perhaps this month is discernment.
I think discernment's important. You know, me and Angelina talked about a lot of different things this evening. And, you know, like I say with every teacher and everything, I mean, it's our truth for me and Angelina. Doesn't have to be yours. I think Socrates says, if you understand everything, you understand that you know nothing. And the truth of it is, I think when we finally die, we'll realize that we really didn't even have a grasp of what we thought we understood. But, you know, so use your own discernment. And I think it's really powerful with teachers who teach that, who will tell you, you know, a lot of people could give up their power, you know, in a lot of different situations. And a good teacher is the one that will actually turn to you and kind of turn the question back to you and say, you know, put your hand on your heart, like your right hand on your heart, and ask yourself, ask that internal higher self being inside of yourself, what is the answer to this question? Because we are so busy kind of giving our power away and looking outside of ourselves. I mean, that's the whole spiritual journey. I mean, how much of us thinks that more yoga, more meditation, more practice, more spiritual teachings, more this, more that is going to make any type of difference when all the answers are always been inside of us. So with that, Angelina, thanks a lot and have a great night. It's always great having you on. And I want to say goodnight to everybody. All right. Take care, everybody.
Blessings to all. Thank you.